Hello, I'm Kristen Marchand, and this is the Opiongo Line, a podcast dedicated to the local heritage and unique culture of the Upper Madawaska and Opiongo River Valleys, found here in Eastern Ontario, Canada. Last year at this time, we brought you The Mayor's Levy, a show that was essentially a conversation between Sean Conway, host of The Local, and Mark Wilmer, the new mayor of Madawaska Valley Township. It led to a thoughtful and far-ranging interchange that many of you told us you hoped we would repeat again this New Year's Day. Well, the new mayor has had a year on the job, and so we thought we'd honor your request and have his honor join Sean again to talk about how things were going. All of it. The good, the bad, and God forbid, the ugly. Here then is Sean Conway again in conversation with his worship, Mayor Mark Wilmer. Take it away, Sean.
Well, Your Worship, it's that time of the year again. As 2023 winds down, we're about 72 hours from the beginning of a new year, 2024. I'm delighted to welcome you back to what we call our levy show. For those of you who may have heard last year's show, the first one we did with the new mayor of Madawaska Valley Township, it was a really good opportunity for all of us to get a sense of Mark Wilmer, who he was, and what his plans were for his new job as the leader of the municipal council at Madawaska Valley. So, Your Worship, it's great fun to have you back. You're looking very well. You've had a very busy year. I'm sure you've had a very busy Christmas season to date. And how has the holiday season gone thus far?
Well, thank you, Sean. First of all, it is a pleasure to be back here. And it doesn't seem like a year ago. It seems like just yesterday that we were sitting here having this chat, and very happy to be back. It's been a great holidays. I've really enjoyed the last week of just it slowing down a little bit because it has been a busy year.
So I think we talked last year about the amount of time you have spent as an elected official on various local governments. And I think that number is well over 30 years. But this past year has been an unusual year in that instead of being led by someone else as your mayor, your reeve, you have been the leader of that council at Madawaska Valley. So my first question is, after nearly 1 year has passed, any comments on the difference as between being a member of council and being led by your mayor or reeve, and as has been your experience this last 12 months, being that leader of council and leading a group of people, all of whom have their own points of view and their own agendas to some extent, especially in a big rural township like this where there are different communities involved. What's your one overriding impression about the difference between being led as a councillor and being mayor and leading the council?
Well, that's an interesting question because it sort of dates me too, and it hasn't been well over 30 years. It's just over 30 years, but no, I feel like a rookie again. This is my first year as mayor, and it's very, very different from being a councillor. Councillor, you're on a good council, you're part of a team. Being the leader of that team is a different role, and I've enjoyed it, and I think I said last year that one of my strengths is listening, and we do have a diverse council. We come from a diverse community, and we have many different views that often are opposing. But I've always said a good council is one that's made up of opposing and different views. And as long as you can work with respect for each other and bring them together, that's the best type of council. And I've spent a lot of time listening to each council member, getting to know them. And I really am very happy with the entire council that we have. I think we've got a good group of people that are working hard for the community and all in their own ways. And there's a lot of expertise around the table that I don't have, but together as a team, we've got a lot of expertise. So to me, it's been it's a lot more work, but it's very rewarding too.
Just the way you said it's been a lot more work makes me think that that perhaps may have been one of the big surprises of the year just ending.
No, it wasn't a surprise. I knew it was going to be a lot more work. I've seen how, you know, I've worked with 7-8 mayors over my time, and I know how much more work the mayors have than the rest of council. And, you know, here, being a member of Renfrew County, we also serve on the county council, and that in itself adds a significant load.
Well, you've anticipated my next question, which is exactly that. As head of council, it's your responsibility to represent Madawaska Valley at Renfrew County Council. But it's also your responsibility as head of council to be the point person who presumably deals with the MP, the MPP, ministers of the federal and provincial government where necessary and appropriate given the requests that the municipality has before senior levels of government. What's that been like?
Well, John Jakubowski and myself have a very good relationship, and I work well with him. We've had several conversations over the first year. With Cheryl, again, a good relationship, but not, we really haven't had much contact this year. And County Council, I've enjoyed it. I stepped in slowly this year, getting to learn the process. I do serve on the Operations and Health Committee, both of which I enjoy. And I think as we move forward, I'll probably be playing a more active role on those committees. And I know we will have some issues coming forward as we move into 2024 with the county that will have to be dealt with.
So one of the questions I often heard when I was in public life at the provincial level from people that were pretty actively involved in community life was, what the hell do they do at that county council? Like, I understand what goes on at the local level. I think I understand, though I don't always like what I see and hear going on at that Queen's Park, that noisy bunch of characters, and the federal parliament. Well, it's the federal parliament, and it's further away and higher up and all of those kinds of things. But what exactly does that county council do? So for the uninitiated or the puzzled by what the answer to that question is, what would you explain to them is the primary responsibility and the culture in which that decision-making occurs at county council?
Well, I think when we tend to forget about some of the things the county is responsible for, and all our sort of highways through 60, 62 are county roads. You know, they're maintained and looked after by the county. The entire ambulance service is county run. The dispatch system is county run. All of our long-term care homes are looked after by the county. Our community health, which was very prominent during the pandemic, you know, is county operated. So there are many, many things that happen at the county level. We just don't see it on a day-to-day basis or sort of look at it as a day-to-day responsibility. I always think that municipal politicians have the best role because we deal with the everyday, the garbage pickup, these sort of things that are important to people's daily lives. But sometimes the county role is really overlooked.
And the county is more of a parliamentary role in the sense that there are just more people there. A typical lower tier municipality in Renfrew County is going to have a council of a mayor and four, maybe five, maybe six councillors, but the biggest council would probably be six, I would guess, right?
That's right.
County council is now, what, 18?
18.
With the warden. So that gets to a level where there are more people involved and coalition building becomes important because in my day, the county council, the political culture of the county council was often the Highway 17 corridor, meaning really Arnprior, Renfrew, Pembroke, Petawawa, Deep River, where the population was. There was twice the population along that corridor, broadly speaking, that was to be found along the Highway 60 corridor, excluding Renfrew, and smaller municipalities always felt that they had to be very alert and alive to making sure that their interests got at least some attention. And of course, to do that, they had to be careful that they didn't get too many votes where the big boys and girls just lined up with their whatever the number of votes were against a much smaller vote total from the county folks. How have you enjoyed the inevitable coalition building that's required to get the broader county council seized of what people in Combermere and Wilno are saying is tolerable, beyond which there's going to be sparks flying?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and one that I'm still working on. In the first year, we really didn't have to do that, but you're absolutely right. At the county, each head of the municipality is a county councillor, so you have 18 of us total with the warden, and we are outnumbered by the communities along Highway 17. And we also have a weighted vote system at the county. So my votes are one-third of what Petawawa's are.
And explain the reason for that weighted vote.
It's based on population, yes. So, and ours went up by one. I think Petawawa's went up. They regularly adjust them. But, you know, I think they have 45 votes. We have 15. So along the corridor, we tend to have the larger communities too. So when it comes to a vote, you know, if it's a corridor versus the rest of us issue, we may have issues in trying to get enough votes. We may have 10 out of 18 municipalities, but that doesn't matter when it comes to the weighted vote issue, because if it's the major, the Armpire, the Renfrew, the Petawawa, you know, those are the ones that are producing the most votes.
My research of recent days has reminded me that there is an issue that has already been dealt with locally by Madawaska Valley Township Council that is now attracting the attention of Renfrew County Council, and that's the development charge. And could you just explain as much as you would care to? Well, first of all, what is a development charge? What was the nature of the debate and the conclusion of that debate locally here, Madawaska Valley Township Council? How did it resolve the development charge proposal that was before it this past year? And what are you hearing is the plan of Renfrew County Council to apparently proceed with some version of a development charge in the year upcoming?
All right. Well, that's a very good question too, because that was one of the first major issues that this new council dealt with, and we had proposed development charges. It was something carried over from last council. I did support it, and I do believe in them. I've worked in communities. Armpire has them. Other communities have them, and they work very well because communities are strapped in the ways they have to bring in revenue, and development charges can be used to bring in revenue strictly for your community. So we had identified roads in the township, recreation, and also fire as the areas that we would use ours for. So what it does is, with a new development, you pay a development charge when you're building. And that is used to go into the development charge fund and goes towards, because with new development, there is a cost. You know, every time you increase in size, you may need a bigger fire department. You may need to add a lane to the roadways, these sort of things. So it's designed to cover those type of things. Anyway, we did bring it forward, and council, after a lot of public pressure against it, voted it down, and I accept that, and I think that council made a good decision, and I live by that. We were proposing a $1,900 development charge at the time, and as I said, it was rejected. So the county now has come forward with a proposal that that would impose a development charge in the neighborhood of $4,700 per build. That would be right across the county. And it would be up to the municipality to collect it and then forward it off to the county. After our residents voted down the local one, I cannot support this. And my big reason for not supporting it is that when I look at the projects that are listed that this will fund, none of them are in our township. All the money will be going, or 90% of it will go towards the Highway 17 corridor. So why should we in Madawaska Valley have to pay on new builds $4,700 when it won't be used in our township? You know, and how can you sell that after we've voted down a $1,900 one that would fully benefit our township?
You know, just let me play devil's advocate for a moment. Politicians would surely understand that if they're imposing a charge for which there's no discernible benefit for the taxed, as you've indicated, that's going to be a real problem for, if not everybody, enough people on that council to really cause serious trouble going forward. What are the kinds of projects that are on that list that appear to be primarily benefiting only the people on the Highway 17 corridor?
Well, first of all, the county has limited their development charge projects to roads. They are all road construction projects in that area. So that's what it is, and they're all road projects that would be funded, but nothing in this area, because really there's nothing that is absolutely needed. I mean, that's not saying there wouldn't be something in the future, but when I look at it and I say, okay, $4,700, and we're really, it doesn't help us. It's not worth doing it, and it's benefiting a good chunk of the county, but not our end. And the other thing too is they did present two options. I'm talking about option one, which every municipality would pay into. They did, in fairness, present a second option that was just the Highway 17 corridor communities paying into it. Our official response was no to either, because if you accept option two, which is the Highway 17 option, it's reviewable in 5 years. So that means changes can be made at that time. So we've said no development charges. However, if it comes to a vote and if it comes down to, you know, crunch time, I could probably accept the Highway 17 option. But I'd prefer to see none.
Let me play devil's advocate one more way, and that is, so most of these they're all road projects, and they're mostly all road projects that fall within the county's responsibility in and around the Highway 17 corridor, correct?
That's correct.
So two of the largest employers in the entire region are Atomic Energy of Canada, CRNL, I guess we call it now, and the military base at Petawawa. I can see someone saying, well, if you want, we can put a monitor on those county roads that connect people coming from just about everywhere in the county of Renfrew to those two very large employment sites, and we might be surprised at where people are coming from. And so it may only be 7 kilometers of county road, but that person's coming from back behind Brudenell, or coming from up on the other side of, Point Alexander. Is that likely a winning argument?
Well, that's a valid point, and actually you sound like you work for the county when you make that argument, because that's sort of how they would try to sell it, is that we are one county, we are one, and I understand that, and I try to promote us as one county as much as possible. But to me, it's just something that doesn't make sense for the amount especially in these times. I mean, we're talking about trying to build housing. How do we build housing if we're adding $4,800 to each new build? And these are the sort of things that right now at this time, no, it doesn't have the benefits we need. So, yes, it might benefit a few people that are driving in, and certainly people do commute from here to the base, to Pembroke, to areas around that would benefit for some of the projects that are being proposed.
Well, you've taken me to where I want to go with the next question, which is housing. If one were to listen to the Ontario Association of Municipalities, AMO, and its dialogue with the provincial government, and quite frankly, its dialogue with the federal government, few topics now are more transcendent than housing. Housing, we're in terrible shape with housing. We've got an economy that's doing not badly, and we can't house the people that need to be housed for these jobs to be actually taken up. Where do we sit in a place like Madawaska Valley with the state of housing, affordable housing for people? I mean, one of the things the pandemic helped ignite, which is a tremendous inflation in house prices. Houses that were, you know, $100,000 pre-pandemic, halfway through the pandemic, were two and a half times that. Mm-hmm. And the effect of that was to price a lot of local people, young people particularly, out of that market. One of the questions I keep asking myself is, where are those people going? Because the stress tests that the Department of Finance federally and all the banks and financial institutions have imposed have effectively, and to some degree understandably, taken a whole tranche of people, young people especially, out of that market. So looking at the housing situation, both home ownership and rental accommodation that's affordable, what's on the agenda here in Madawaska Valley to help alleviate a real pressure that's there for just about everybody?
Well, some of the stuff we've done this year, and we're limited, and I don't want to sort of push it onto other levels of government, but same time, I'm going to say what we're trying to do is, from our planning perspective, we're trying to smoothen the process, making it as easy as possible to get permits for developers to have access to land, make the possibilities as easy as possible. We've done an inventory of all our surplus lands and looked at sites where potentially there is room to put some housing development. Now we've got to get out there and sort of market those. But I really feel the problem comes down to, we need the provincial government and the federal government behind us, because, you know, with the housing issue, most people are still looking at urban centers where they want to go. And how do you bring affordable housing or attainable housing to rural communities? And it's interesting because I'm at the ROMA conference.
That's the Rural Ontario Municipal.
In a couple of weeks, and one of the sessions I'm looking most forward to is on rural funding for affordable housing. So we'll see at that and see what we can learn. But, you know, I find the whole housing issue is it's a very interesting one here, because it's not just affordable, but it's all kinds of housing that we're lacking. And, you know, I have people, and I think we talked about this last year, but when they retire, they have nowhere to move into, and they end up leaving the community even though they don't want to. You know, and there's no sort of middle types of home for people coming here who are new employees at the hospital. They can't find a place to work, or a new teacher can't find a place to live. These are the situations I hear all the time. And so it's not just affordable, it's all kinds of housing that we're lacking. And that brings me to probably my biggest disappointment of the year, and that was the collapse of King's Landing, because I really had optimism on that, and I believe that would be a start, and it could spur other growth.
Just explain to the listening
King's
audience
Landing
what,
is a,
what that was and where it was.
It was a development that could have had up to 70 different types of housing, from apartments to singles to semi-detached. It would be a mixed type of housing, and it would be right across from the hospital on Siberia Road and Trader Lane. And it was ready to go, and I know there's been a lot of discussion in the public about what happened, and I was fortunate to meet with the developer. He called me about 2-3 weeks ago and asked if he could sit down with me, and we did. And you know, he made it very clear that he was completely satisfied with how the township had operated, and it had nothing to do with the township. But one of his partners passed away, and he was really the one with a lot of the money. So he's. But what was interesting to me was we had a good talk. We talked about other possibilities, and while the development King's Landing may not happen, I'm very optimistic that there's still an opportunity there that he's willing to explore, and will look in different directions to see what they can do. And so those are the sort of things that bring me hope. We do have small infill apartment units that are starting to occur within the community, which I think are needed. Because there's a lack of apartments, and especially nice apartments in the community.
Well, there is good stuff happening. As we tape this program in the heart of Old Barry's Bay, I can think of two developments that seem to be underway within a snowball's throw of where we're taping this show. And from everything I know, they are going to put into the mix some very attractive units for some parts of the housing market here that are badly stressed because there's insufficient supply.
That's correct. And you know, we're, as you say, we're just a snowball's throw away from probably 6 new units. So it's good to see. And this is the heart of Barry's Bay.
So let me then move to another area that is on a lot of people's mind, particularly when you think about the summer just ended. You know, the Americans know Canada for a lot of reasons, but they certainly found a new reason this past summer in Washington, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, Chicago. What is this? We can't see the nose of in the front of our face because there's so much fog, and not fog, but smoke coming out of the fires of Northern Ontario and Northern Quebec that you can't see anything for days in midsummer. And that, needless to say, was something I don't think to that degree had ever occurred before. And so one of the questions I have for you is this whole question of climate change. Now, I know it takes many people to the most excitable part of the political debate, but the reality is that, you know, again, this summer, you look at those fires, and they weren't just in, you know, Western Canada. 180 homes were destroyed in suburban Halifax. There were all kinds of serious damage done in the Northwest Territories, where some of this climate change impact is at its worst. Yeah. So one of the questions I have, and there were days this summer when I walked out of my front door and I thought, boy, these conditions, it's very dry out there, it's very windy, and if a fire got going, I wonder what might happen. I have a niece who is out in Kelowna, British Columbia, and she's actually living in West Kelowna, and they got the fright of recent times with fires that were just moving in all directions and very serious damage and dislocation as a result. What's the council doing and what's the county doing to think about hardening our systems? One of my great fears is something called atmospheric rivers. And that's this phenomenon now where you get, you know, a weather pattern. And they're occurring right across the continent of North America. It just moves in over a community. It stalls and then drops 8 inches of rain on a small place or a big place in the space of 6 hours and just literally drowns everything around it. or in the case of these fires, they come to this beautiful town in southern British Columbia, beautiful place called the Soyuz, right on the American border. And they wake up one morning and there's a fire that started on the American side of the border at Washington State and just came roaring up one side of the mountain, and by noon the next day was heading down the mountain and all set to attack and potentially destroy a community of 4,500 people. Now, fortunately, the wind pattern changed just exactly when and where you'd like it to change. But are these concerns just fanciful? And is there anything happening at the county level or at the local level to sort of look at the state of infrastructure and say, what would happen if on fire or on these torrential downpours, because they seem to be on the front page of papers and more likely in the front parts of newscasts just about every week of the year now.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And I mean, just look outside the window today and it's the end of December and we have no snow. It's warm. The climate is changing. And I think that's the first thing we have to get across to people is climate change is real. There seems to be a lot of fight still against that fact, saying, well, look at today, it's minus 20, so it's not real. But it is real. If you look right across, and you've mentioned some of the examples, and I was out in British Columbia in Salmon Arm when I had to go inside. There were flakes of ashes falling on the deck, and I had another experience in British Columbia at a place called Loon Lake, where I had somebody knock at my door and said, there's a fire really close. If it gets any closer, we can't get you out. You have to take the boat out and sit in the middle of the lake. It's getting dangerous right across the country. And you mentioned the fire, you mentioned the rain. Also in this area, tornadoes are increasing significantly, and we've never seen them like we are now. And we've seen, particularly in the Ottawa area, a fair amount of damage from storms and mini tornadoes, and Calabogie area too. And it's something that's real, and I think that's the first thing people have to understand, that this has to be taken seriously. Our climate is going to continue to increase in temperature. And so your question about how much have we done, we haven't done enough. We really haven't looked at what has to be done to protect us from climate changing events. You know, we have our emergency management teams and these sort of things set up. One of the other things, particularly in this area, that we're going to have to deal with more and more, and we've seen it twice since 2017, is flooding. Because of the change, it's not the same flows that used to happen. And Ontario Hydro can only manage it to a certain degree. And those type of events are going to become more and more common. So we have to prepare ourselves better for this. And I'll be quite frank, Sean, we have not done enough yet to prepare ourselves for that.
Well, I don't think you're unusual in that respect, because it's really hard for a lot of us of a certain age to really internalize what we're seeing and feeling. You just think this has got to be a passing trend.
Well, I believe 100%, and my beliefs are based on science, but I am amazed when I go to talk to people how many people say, Mark, climate change isn't real. That's out there. It's still a common thought, and I don't understand it.
One way that I find useful to talk about this is to ask people if they've been watching their annual insurance premiums for property and casualty, because the insurers are in the business of assessing and rating risk, and you just look at the disasters that are all about us. And I know this because governments itself, and I'll ask you this question, have those people that insure your physical infrastructure and related stuff. That's multi-millions of dollars worth of investment. Are you getting any indication from insurers that that infrastructure needs to be hardened against the very things we're talking about, or is that still kind of a matter to be decided?
It's still a matter to be decided, but certainly insurance costs are going up. There's items that are being excluded from policies, these sort of things that are changing. And I know as a house owner, you see the same sort of thing. So the insurance companies are aware of some of the changes that are happening. And yeah, that does explain the reality of climate change to a lot of people.
Now, let me ask you, because you said that you listen a lot, and everybody tells me that you're a very good listener. So if you're listening a lot, I'm sure you're hearing what some of the rest of us are hearing. And it's not high praise for the telcos and what they're not doing to improve the internet access to not just the Madawaska Valley, but lots of the rest of rural Canada. Have you got anything to report on that? Because maybe my ears are just picking up an occasional crank or protester, and they don't represent anybody but themselves. But my sense is that there's some frustration about the fact that the internet now is just like your circulatory system. It's a vital resource without which you can hardly breathe economically. And so what is the latest you would report to your citizens, Mr. Mayor, on where we are with, because the governments of Canada and Ontario are forever talking about raining more money on rural parts of the province and country. Any good news to report there, or is still mostly a work in progress?
Well, the good news is that there is a plan, and we have EORN, which is the Eastern Ontario Rural Network, that is working on, the full coverage for Renfrew County and our area in particular. But with everything like this, it takes time. And to give you an example, because we're right in the middle of one project right now, which is desperately needed to service a large part of, covers our township down towards BLR, areas like that.
Brunel, Lindock, Raglan.
Raglan, yeah. And that's the tower up on, what's the road? I should remember, up at the top of the hill in Combermere.
Oh, yes, the Rogers Tower.
The Rogers Tower, yes, which is coming back to council in January. And we did have a public meeting on it. And Rogers has been great to work with and has moved it several times and is coming back with a final proposal. And that will be their final proposal. But I think it will satisfy most people. But there will be some. There are people who just object to towers completely. And so,
and just so we're clear, this is additional private sector infrastructure that, once established in the way intended, will in fact strengthen the capacity of people here to have cell phones that can.
That's right.
Work.
It'll cover areas that are presently dead. So you will now have cell phone service in those areas. And that's what needs to be done. There needs to be more towers put up. And my understanding is that this is the last tower that would have to go up in Madawaska Valley. That doesn't mean there won't be any more dead areas, but there will be towers around our township that still have to be built before it's all covered. So it does take time, and I've seen on this one how difficult it is to get one tower up in an area where very, very few people live. I'm hoping that this tower can go through. It'll add to the network in our area. But the network is improving. It's a slow process. I encourage people to be patient with it. But it will one day get to the point that we will have full coverage.
But one of the other questions in this whole debate about the internet has to do with business and institutions. There's often a complaint that we can't expand our business because we just don't have the capacity. And even the capacity we have isn't always reliable. Now, that seems to be a complaint in a lot of places. I don't mean to just isolate this to Madawaska Valley. But Do you hear much complaining from businesses in the region, in the area covered by Madawaska Valley Township, about the basic adequacy of the internet to allow those business to continue in business and hopefully grow, expand, and prosper?
No, I haven't heard many comments at all. I know where I live, just outside of the village of Barry's Bay, I have internet problems. If I'm doing a Zoom meeting, I can often become frozen. So I know there are problems, but I think one of the, on a positive side, I think one of the good news stories, I know it's a private business, but it's another option for a lot of people, is the arrival of Starlink, because that has presented an option to people, particularly I know along the River Road area, Siberia Road, that couldn't get internet before, are receiving fast speed internet through Starlink.
Speaking about other good news, and again, I'm going to sound very Barry's Bay centric, but I think one of the really exciting new developments here is the herb farm up at the old Murray's planning site at the end of Lane Street. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It looks like there's, what, 50 or 60 people working up there now?
I believe so. And yeah, it was during the last term of council that facility opened. But it's very exciting. It's great to see. You know, there were some residents on Lane Street that were worried about it when it first came in, but they've seemed to fit in very, very well. They're doing well. They're a good community partner. In fact, the food bank is looking at moving their location there with the help of the St. Francis Herb Farm people. So they've worked well, and no, it's an exciting story, and I think they have room to grow there, and but they seem to be doing very, very well.
On infrastructure, again, a couple of questions come to mind. You know, communities always hope to grow, and one of the constraining issues for population centers of more than probably 1,000, 1,200, and that's not everybody. Like, that would be probably the village of Barry's Bay proper is, what, about 1,300 people?
1,300,
so that's
yeah.
Roughly 30% of the population, maybe not 30, 27% of the population. Because I need to be reminded that most of the the majority of the population that you serve is rural, increasingly non-farm.
But it's an interesting one, a statistic, because I think we have officially 4,421 people listed in Madawaska Valley, but when you get the voters lists at election time, we have close to 8,000 people, because we have the seasonal residents too who
right.
own.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you look at it, we really vary between 4,000 and 8,000 people depending on the time of year.
My experience from a time in politics is those seasonal, those cottagers are a special category of elector, but we'll leave that for another day.
And I'll stay out of that one.
two parts of infrastructure, just to get a comment. Where are we with the state of our, the capacity really of our water and wastewater systems? My understanding is still a fair bit of capacity for growth and expansion.
Yes, and that's one of the priorities that when we're looking at housing, and that's, again, going back to King's Landing, that would have been right on the water and wastewater systems. That's what we're looking for, because we have, I think we're around 60% capacity. So we have a lot of room still, and development could occur up Pog Lake Road, you know, heading towards the Wilno direction, you know, along the highway. There's a lot of room for expansion of that system, and that's the type of development we'd like to see.
What's great about that, of course, and I think this doesn't always recommend itself to the average citizen who looks at a water bill and says, well, I'm spending $925 to have water and wastewater service. That's a lot of money, and it is a lot of money for people on fixed incomes and all the rest. However, the reality is the more people that you can attached to that system, the per unit price should come down.
That's exactly right. And, you know, again, we talked about the Roma conference, and I'm working on a delegation with the mayor of Whitewater Township. We have the second highest water rates in the county. They have the highest by far. Their rates would stun you, and because they've had to rebuild their plant on Muskrat Lake and change the systems, because Muskrat Lake is a very damaged lake, and
this is the system that feeds the village of Cobden.
Basically, yeah. So it's the same size. We have about 600 users. Theirs is similar size, but they're looking at 120, 130% increases. And these are the sort of things that. So we're going to move forward with the province and ask them to reconsider some of the limits and the funding for small municipal water and wastewater systems, to see if there's any ability to get some help there.
How difficult do you think the issue of density is going to be in that debate? Because, again, one of the things that I experienced when I was in politics was trying to convince people that a town plan that was set up, you know, in the late 19th century, you know, where everybody was on an individual well and septic system, allowed you a certain lot size. In fact, it required a certain lot size. But when you go to a communal system, you can, in fact, get much better densities. And if you apply any kind of a business case, because those systems cost millions and millions of dollars, and you can't just imagine that you're still back in the early days of the 20th century and everybody should have a big lot with a lot of, you know, very expensive underground piping going by a lot of unserved land. If you were a developer, you'd say, well, that fails any kind of a business test. But there's still not a very good understanding of that, in my experience.
Well, you're right on that, too. And that's one of the things when I say we need different types of housing. And I'm encouraged by the Ford government sort of plan to allow secondary developments or secondary dwellings on properties and things like that, because I think that's where you need to be looking at. We have room within the village to increase the density in many, many areas by adding secondary residences.
Now, I've been hearing in recent weeks that there's some excitement, actually, about the prospects of what we used to call granny flats, those kind of secondary. What did you call it? What was the phrase you used?
Secondary residences.
So describe exactly what they are. Is it what we used to know as a granny flat?
It could be that, or it could be severing a portion to allow for a second house or apartment or something on that area. Yes.
All right, the other question on infrastructure, and this is always a fun topic. I remember having quite a heated debate about 30 years ago with the then council in Barry's Bay. They didn't like something the government of Ontario was doing about restricting, I think it was cardboard, going into landfills. And I remember coming up here for a meeting, and I was trying to make the point that, folks, one of the most valuable pieces of real estate you own is your landfill. And if you don't believe me, just wait till you have to go and get a new one, because the market test for that is going to just gobsmack you at terms of cost. So I've been hearing that the rate of depletion of available space in the MV landfills is accelerating beyond that what was planned for maybe 10, 15 years ago. Is that correct? And are we down now to about 10 years of capacity before something significant has to be done to replace what we've got?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of my priorities for the upcoming year. We've already started working on that, and we do have a company that is looking into what we've got left. We know we have about 11 years left. That's a significant drop from, say, 5 years ago, when we thought we had 20-some years left. And that just shows the increase amount that is going in. And a lot of that happened during the pandemic, when people renovated and changed their houses. And so there were benefits to the township, but there was a downside too. So you're right, to find another landfill site is a very difficult process. A lot of approvals have to be granted, and we do have a site. However, I think we're also fortunate in there is a possibility that our Bark Lake landfill site can be expanded, which would be a much easier and cheaper solution. And that's what I'm hoping, that we'll be able to work something out to do that. Both options are still expensive, and we're going to have to start preparing for that. But I'm optimistic that we can somehow make the Bark Lake landfill site larger, and that we'll be able to continue operation there well beyond the 11 years.
We're running down to adjournment time here, and there's two or three other quick things I'd like to touch on. We've got two major redevelopments occurring on what I will call the social and health side. The big redevelopment of Valley Manor, the long-term care facility, very significant redevelopment, and the big new development of the emergency department and related facilities at St. Francis Memorial Hospital. Anything you want to say to your citizens on this broadcast about how the municipality is viewing that, and any thoughts?
I know personally I'm very excited about both. It's a little frustrating that hasn't been much movement so far. I know we are in contact with the particularly on the Valley Manor side, but I believe things are progressing. I know from the emergency side, in talking to the CAO, they are progressing through, I think he called it phase 3 out of 4, and making progress on that. But I would, both are very important to our community, and I think the general populace will appreciate both when they're finished. The Valley Manor, I'm hoping that we'll see some physical action on it soon. The site is there. The fundraising, I believe, is close to its goal, if not already met. But one of the things, I think one of the issues with it was, during the pandemic and the delays, costs went up and they require more funding.
Yeah, I was looking at some old files I had, and I think by my calculation, Valley Manor was built in 1975, 76, 77, or in that late 70s period. I think all dollars in. Now, they were 1970 dollars, but there was significant inflation during that period of time as well. And I think the total bill was about $3 million bucks. And I think the number we're now looking at for the redevelopment is multiples of that, well beyond any kind of inflationary number. And I'm no expert on the topic, but I just think about it from the point of view of, say, the provincial government also having to underwrite big chunks of this.
Well, and that's what they will have to do, and I think that's where some of the delays. I'm sure they will come forward with the necessary funding, but I think it's sort of shocking almost how much things went up during the 2-3 years of the pandemic.
Well, I noticed in the Ontario Finance Minister's fall economic statement of early November, he formally launched the Ontario Infrastructure Bank, gave it $3 billion. But one of the eligible categories is money for long-term care redevelopment. And have you heard anything about whether that's going to be part of the solution to finance?
Really, I don't know, because that really isn't part of our jurisdiction, but we do try to keep in touch as much as possible and sort of be knowledgeable on what's happening. But I would hope that they're trying to access those funds.
One of the things that I hear from employers, that it's still a pretty tight labor market. And that's a good problem to have. I mean, one is very concerned about people that don't seem to be able to, because they lack the education and training or some other issues that are keeping them from taking up employment. But every time I drive by my old high school, Madawaska Valley High School, and I must say I am concerned about what I see as the declining enrollment. I mean, I think we've bottomed out, but when I walked through those doors 56 years ago, I think we were 550 people in the 9 to 13 category, and I think we're less than half that now. And we have a significant homeschooling reality here in Madawaska Valley, and that really does affect the institutional educational world, whether or not people realize it. But if 100 plus people are withdrawn from, Sherwood Public School and or you know, John Bosco separate school, well, that's going to be felt. And it was always an option. I'm not here to say that it wasn't. But the question is this. Given the link between education and training and taking your place in an economy where education and training is ever more, not ever less important to getting and keeping a good job, do you ever look at our educational infrastructure and say there's more we could do locally in connecting that capacity with the job market that's here? I look at the papers every week and I'm struck, for example, just the municipal sector alone, how many good jobs they're offering because their workforce is aging, they're replacing people. But I know perfectly well that there's a lot of those jobs. I've got 20 years almost of formal education, and I couldn't do most of those jobs, which is probably a good thing for people depending on those services. But do you think there's something we should be doing more of locally to get maybe a better yield from the millions of dollars we're investing and have invested in our, not just our education system, but the training portions that go with it? Because as I look at a lot of the federal and provincial offerings, there's a surprising amount of it that assumes a certain degree of local initiative.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And I first of all, I mean, you've covered a lot of topics in that question. Yes, our high school has really decreased in enrollment. My wife is an educational assistant there, and you know, we look at the size of it, and in fact, the school will be renamed in the next year or so, and is becoming one school from kindergarten through to grade 12. So hopefully they stay consistent with the name and just change it slightly, but we're not sure on that. But yes, the enrollment has decreased substantially over the years. When it comes to local job, we one of the questions I always ask myself is, where have all the workers gone? Because this is not just a Madawaska Valley problem. It's right across the country.
No, you're absolutely right. But one of the things, and ironically, the federal government is as interested in this as anybody, and that is how do communities retool adult workers who have been displaced by an economy. And there's some very interesting projects out there trying to connect people of a certain age, that is between the ages of, say, 30 and 55, and give them the skill sets they need to get re-engaged in a local regional economy. It doesn't do them any good to say, well, you're unemployed in Wilno and your new job is in Lloydminster, Saskatchewan. No. That's probably not going to work for most people. So I'm just wondering whether or not we as a community, I don't point the finger of blame at say, the council. I just sometimes think, you know, and when I was Minister of Education, you would see this from time to time and place to place. Not all communities were of the same level of creative enthusiasm and making sure that people with the money were aware that there was a community that was very anxious and willing to be creative and participatory in some new possibilities. And I sometimes think we may be just a little too placid for our own good in these parts.
And maybe we are. And I think we could quite likely be that. But I think it's a very challenging issue. And, our workforce is limited here, but we probably can do a better job of linking people to local jobs that are available. I look in the municipal sector, and it's interesting because what we found over the last 3-4 years is, you know, whenever there's a new position offered in one of the Renfrew County municipalities, all the applicants are coming from the 16, 17 other municipalities in the township. So people are just moving from one community to the other, and it's the same people, same network, but really not a lot of new blood coming in. So to me, it's an interesting situation. I look, we still have Pizza closed. I'm not sure about the full story on that. I don't think Tim Hortons is open to full hours yet, but you know, there's certainly a labor shortage, and I think your point is a good one, that we need to sort of direct people towards positions that are within the community and help in that way.
And the good news is the economic forecast for the next 18 months are looking more positive than they were this time last year for the year just ending. So that problem is a good problem to have, and we may have more of it than...
Well, they're looking positive, and inflation is slowing down, and I think we've managed things very well in the township. You know, last year we kept our budget increase to about 2%, and we're hoping to do the same thing this year. And when I spoke with the treasurer, I'd say 2 weeks ago, I said, you know, okay, well, the rate is about 5% now. If we come in at 2%, I'll be very happy, but I don't want to be stuck that at the end of the fourth year, just before the election, we're having to look at an 11%. And no, I think we're in good shape. We're able to, because we've invested wisely, because that's the other thing. When you invest during an inflation period, our investments are increasing significantly too. So I think we're in a good place. The township is well managed financially, and we should be able to come in at between 2 and 2.5%. So yeah, we're doing okay, but the economy hopefully will improve and help.
I can just hear some of the listeners out there saying, and I hope, Conway, you get that message to the people running the governments of Canada and the governments of Ontario. Last question, quick question. What is your single biggest priority for the next 18 months?
I think we've already touched on it. I have big concerns about the landfill, and I think we need to find a solution, need to find exactly where we're at, and you know, develop a plan, and which we already have started on, but we need to make sure we're prepared, because 11 years isn't a long time, and to get any new infrastructure ready, to find ways to pay for it, that sort of thing takes time. So I look at that, and I think that's probably number one as we move into 2024.
Well, that's a very efficient and a very direct answer, Your Worship, and I thank you for it. And a few days short of January 1, 2024, may I thank you very much for making time in your busy schedule for joining us for edition number 2 of the Mayor's Levy interview on the Opiongo Line podcast, or the local as we call it. And I hope we can do this again next year, assuming both of us are around next year.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Sean, and I really enjoy this. And you know, it's nice to do this during a little bit of a slower time. So thank you very much. And I'd like to wish everyone a very happy new year, and all the best for 2024. I think I enter 2024 in a very positive manner. But I do know we have some disadvantaged people in our community. So I ask you all not just to think of them, but to actually reach out and do something to help as we head into 2024.
And one of the ways we can all do that is support the local food bank.
That's right. The food bank plays a marvelous role in the community. And, you know, you just by the number of people, you can see how important it is.
Well, on that very positive and very constructive note, thank you again. Happy New Year.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you.
That was Mark Wilmer, Mayor of the Madawaska Valley Township, in conversation with Sean Conway. We hope you enjoyed that chat. We also hope you know that democracy only works when we all take a keen interest in the future of our communities. So get out there and resolve to attend at least one council meeting this year. And talk to your neighbors. Let the powers that be know that your vote counts, and that you and your neighbors' perspectives matter on all things political, especially at the local municipal level. I'm Kristen Marchand, and for the producer of the Opiongo Line, Barry Conway, we'd like to wish you and the mayor and Sean a very happy new year. Good day, and God bless.